the answers were very positive. And this was pointed out by one of the steering committee members. They said, well, people aren't complaining about your service or your buses or your equipment. They're saying we want more.
Welcome to Transit Unplugged. I'm your host, Paul Comfort, and today is another episode of News and Views. We're excited to have with us David Ruffey as our newsmaker interview for this week's edition. David is CEO of Mountain Lion Transit Authority in Morgantown, West Virginia. David and I got to see each other again recently at the first in-person conference we'd both been to, which was out in Montana for the CTAA Sun Conference. David, thanks so much for being with us today on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. I appreciate it and look forward to the opportunity to talk with you and talk about a few things that are going on in Mountain Lion.
Dave, you're a longtime industry veteran and have been there for many years heading up the agency. Tell us a little about the agency itself and yourself and what you do there.
Okay. Well, I'm in Morgantown, West Virginia, and that's home of West Virginia University. Our county service population is a little over 100,000. West Virginia University's enrollment is about 30,000. We have 23 routes. We do about 24 buses out there at peak. We have 70 employees. Our total fleet with all of our demand response is about 35 vehicles. We have a combined maintenance facility and service center, about a 40,000 square foot building, and it's located in one of the little suburbs of Morgantown, Westover. We've been over here since 2016. Lost 10 years since 2006, when we renovated this facility. And I've been working with Mountain Lion for, I started in 1997. So closing in on that 25 year mark. Before that, I worked for the city of Morgantown for 10 years and came up through the ranks in the local community. Saw transit as an opportunity to do one thing and to work on it. And when I started, we were a pretty small agency. We had about 16 employees and our budget was about $800,000. Now it's about $7 million. And of course, the 70 employees. And we will, pandemic-wise, pre-pandemic, we were doing about 1 million rides a year. Post-pandemic right now, where it looks like we're going to be a little bit more than 50% of that ridership number. So that's one of the challenges that probably pretty much everybody in the transit world is encountering. And that's some of the challenges that we're going to continue to work on as a group, I think.
That's great. David, you and I were talking about the strategic plan that you undertook just starting right before the COVID pandemic broke out. And I think a lot of people found themselves in the middle of projects, you know, when this thing hit. Tell us about that. And I think some of the things that have come out of that are very interesting and newsworthy.
Yeah, we had started, timing's everything, they say. We had started that strategic plan in about November. It was in cooperation with our MPO. And we had held a few public forums and our first really large public forum in March. And then, of course, everything got shut down. So we had to figure out how to pivot over to the digital world. We started doing, of course, Zoom meetings and Facebook Live to try and get public participation. We eventually got that done, but it took us about 6 months longer than we thought. At first, I think we were kind of looking at it saying, maybe this will pass and it won't last. And then we realized it was going to last. We're like, well, we really have to move forward with the plan. And what we learned from it, we learned that along with the ridership from the pandemic effect, it was essential riders. So we learned that people were riding to go to education and training. They were going for employment or health. And you could see that in the parking lot. My office overlooks the main terminal area. And I would see people in their fast food uniforms or in their scrubs. I would see dads with their kids. And so I think the survey really... They were going grocery shopping. I think the survey really reflected the ridership and what they were using public transit for. And when we asked them what priorities, what new developments they would like to see us create and move forward with in public transit, the answers were very positive. And this was pointed out by one of the steering committee members. They said, well, people aren't complaining about your service or your buses or your equipment. They're saying we want more. They were saying we wanted 83% of our respondents said they wanted increased frequency. 59% said they wanted earlier and later bus service each day. 55% said that they wanted weekend bus service and better bus stop access and quality. We actually have a flag system in Montague County, so it's a mix of rural and urban. So we still run a lot of our routes just stopping anywhere anyone flags us down, because we don't have accessible pathways. We don't have those sidewalks out there in the community. So what we learned from that was that we need to keep putting service out there on the street.
And you've come out of those with those recommendations with four or five really interesting projects that I think will resonate. One is a TNC zone. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're looking at a micro transit zone. We're seeing a lot of this around the country. It's either we're going to either work with one of the private industries or work with our own route planning folks to create a zone where we will put a couple of vehicles out in a geographic area, and it'll be a demand response. So people in that area will be able to call for that ride that they want. It's going to make a connection to a mainline bus. It's not going to take them to their final destination. We plan to overlay that with existing fixed route services or deviating route services in our case, in areas where we don't have a lot of service and the limitations, two or three runs a day in those very rural areas, means that people don't have the best access in the world and they have to try and adapt their schedule to ours. So we're going to overlay this TNC, try and encourage people to use it and try it. Maybe it'll give them more flexibility and more opportunities to make the trips that they need to take every day. That's one of recommendations from the project. We're also working to expand our services. We're expanding our inner city service. We connect with the Pittsburgh International Airport and Pittsburgh Greyhound. We connect with two communities in Pennsylvania and three other communities here in West Virginia, North Central West Virginia. We're expanding our weekend and evening service. And we have a new community service center that was developed during the pandemic. It was a former hotel site, and it has a sobriety house. It has a Salvation Army. It has a homeless shelter. So we've expanded service to that area. We're looking at a major marketing campaign, of course, to promote all these services and to reengage with our ridership, to reengage with our clients. We're looking at redesigning our customer service area. We learned a lot about what we should and shouldn't be doing because of COVID. And so we plan to rework that customer service area to make it more touchless and more friendly to the passengers, providing the opportunity for people to spread out and still have accessible information and maybe make a safer environment for our customer service folks as well. There were a couple of other things that came out of that proposal, and then a subsequent grant that we applied for. FTA had AIM grants out there, and the AIM grant that we applied for and were successful in receiving approval, it will let us coordinate with West Virginia University and the Morgantown Parking Authority to try to create a universal fare system. And that universal fare system would be a transparent single form of identification and payment for our passengers across the university's personal rapid transit system. That's an unmanned 70-car overhead rail system that's been around since 1972, along with payment on our buses and then in the local parking authorities. You know, one of the challenges that we all face is how we provide service to the unbanked. And I see some real opportunity if we can figure out the technology to be able to use those parking meter boxes and all those surface parking lots for people to be able to pay and charge their card. So instead of having to go to retail centers, we could use the actual hard facilities that are already in place in the surface parking lot. So I'm excited to see the results of that study and see where that'll lead us. And those are a few of the things that we got from that strategic plan that we're working on.
That's great. Let me follow up with a couple follow-up questions on some of those items. So first off, where's all the money coming from for all this expanded service? Is this the new, money that came from Washington that's helping you fund this? Or are you getting local money or both?
It's both. We fortunately, we also during the pandemic in May of 2020, we had a renewal of our excess property tax levy. That's our only dedicated funding source. So we managed to pass that while everybody was staying at home. not working and not sure what was going to happen, we were saying, come vote for us and pay more on your property taxes. Fortunately, we got support from the community and they did that. It was we in West Virginia, it requires a 60+1 supermajority. So we were pretty thankful and relieved when that happened at the beginning of the pandemic. But also the all of the funding that has come from the Recovery Act and all the new money that has been put into transit, we're using it for traditional transit purposes. But because it was 100% funding, yes, that has freed up some money for us to be able to move to. We have a number of capital projects we're going to work on that are maintenance type issues, you know, putting new concrete in and working on some roofing and expanding our fuel farm, those kinds of things. But that funding has really given us the opportunity to explore further and to expand some services that we've always looked at and said, we know we need to do that, but we just don't have the money to do it.
One final question is, you have what do you do in your spare time? Let's just talk about that, because I think you have a really interesting sideline going on.
Yeah, well, I think spare time might be a misnomer because I do have another business. I actually have a photo business. I have a studio and gallery in Oakland, Maryland, very nearby. And that's what I occupy my evenings and weekends with. So I do pretty much any kind of photography other than weddings. I don't do weddings, but, you know, landscapes, wildlife. I do a lot of events, community events. And I really, that's the passion that gives me the breath of fresh air and lets me use the other side of the brain when the transit wears and tears on you on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And that's why I wanted to bring it out, is that, you know, like my dad was a workaholic. He worked himself, you know, every day well into his 70s and, you know, worked full time and did not have a lot of side hobbies and things like that to occupy him, especially in the last like 10 years of his life. And I just feel like it's important for transit executives to have a well-rounded life. Like you said, left brain and right brain, you know, using both of them to keep your life balanced. Maybe that's a lesson that a lot of us have learned even more so during this pandemic.
Yeah, I think it is important, definitely, to have that balance. And, you know, my family has grown, so I'm past that point. And now I've been able to assess and say, well, what do you really want to spend your extra time doing? And we had an awful lot of time to sit around and think about what we wanted to do in our spare time during the pandemic. And I was really happy I had the photography as a side business. I also, as a part of that business, I offer live music events. So I have jazz and classical music, and I have a beer and wine license. And thankfully, beer and wine was essential during the pandemic. So I was able to stay open. So, yeah, it's worked out well for me, and it does give that stress relief on a regular basis. So I have something to look forward to other than the next day's challenges at work.
Now, is there a website or a business name that people can look you up on for the photography side?
Yeah, there is. It's smokingphoto.com, smokenphoto.com. It's Smoke and Mirrors Photography is the name of my business. I've always thought there was a little bit of magic in photography, if you're familiar with some of the tricks of the trade. And so that's why I came up with that name. Started that business in about 2012. So I've been at it a while.
Very good. And if people want to find out more about your transit agency, the website is really a great name, busride.org. I love that.
Yeah, that tells you I've been around for a while. That was
you grabbed that early on, huh?
Yeah, that URL was available in 1997. Yeah.
That's great. Well, David Bruffy, thank you so much for being our guest today, talking to us about Mountain Line Transit, all the great projects you've got going on there in Morgantown, West Virginia. We wish you the very best of luck as you continue to make transit relevant and continue to expand it in the West Virginia, Western Maryland, Pennsylvania area.
Thank you very much, Paul. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Hi, I'm Alea Carey, a communications consultant who loves working with public transit agencies. David talks here about the outcomes of a survey his team at Mountain Lion conducted. That got me thinking about best practices for transit organizations surveying the public, with a particular focus on closed and open-ended questions. Closed-ended questions can be answered with a yes or a no, or with multiple choice responses. They'll give you the closest thing you can get to a clear answer. But open-ended questions provide you with a different kind of clarity, the clarity of conclusions you might never have reached yourself. Open-ended questions allow respondents to elaborate on their preferences and even use their imagination. Not everybody wants to answer open-ended survey questions, but those who do can give you excellent insights. Balance your survey with open and closed-ended questions. It's generally best to put your open-ended questions towards the end of your survey. If you'd like to talk more about survey best practices or anything else related to communications and public transit, look me up on LinkedIn. My first name is spelled E-L-E-A, last name C-A-R-E-Y.
Hi, this is Mike Bismeyer, Regional Sales Director for Terra, and this is Mike's Minute, where we talk about leadership, mentorship, and kindness, with the hopes it'll inspire you to pay it forward. As we head out of Labor Day weekend and officially head into fall, I wanted to quickly say, as I always do, in honor of Labor Day, make sure to thank a retail worker, first responder, essential worker, or just that person. You know the one that's part of your everyday, with a smile, hello, or a comfortable nod. Life and work move fast, and we need to sometimes slow down, appreciate the choices and habits we are gratefully able to have, and those that do make them possible. I recently had, myself, a small health scare, which put this into clear focus for me. It leads me to reflect on what this week's guest, Dave Bruffy, said when Paul asked him what he likes to do in his spare time. He commented that he is a photographer who particularly likes to take pictures of community events. His passion that gives him a breath of fresh air, he said, when he's looking to have a break from the daily work life. I too enjoy being heavily involved in my local community where I meet a plethora of amazing people making a difference every day. I always say everyone has a story and many of them will blow you away. I challenge you all this week to thank someone, make their day. Try to volunteer within your community in the next little while. You will be amazed at how good it feels to give and engage with other change makers. Kindness is cool, it's free, and it feels great to give it away. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
Thanks for being with us today on the podcast. This is the part of the show where we normally talk about the future of public transportation. And of course, we know that the future is largely dependent on the right leadership. And that often is executive leadership at transit agencies. I'm often called upon to speak at transit agencies around the country and the world on leadership topics. And that's where I am this week, actually, is in the central part of America, speaking at transit agencies and getting feedback from them on the projects they're working on and the leadership required. I wrote a book along with nine other transit CEOs several years ago called Full Throttle, Living Life to the Max with No Regrets. It's on Amazon. And put some chapters in there that I've read from before on this segment of the podcast. I want to read you another one today. It's chapter six from the book, and it's called Executives Get Paid for Their Judgment. And that really is what we need right now in this new burst of the pandemic, is great leadership to get us out of it. And that leadership comes from executives in transit agencies. Here we go. Shortly after I was hired as vice president of a large transportation company in Baltimore, Maryland, the owner decided to hire another man to oversee much of my work in helping to expand the company. Ron came in with his own executive assistant who had been with him through previous jobs, and he came with a wealth of experience and knowledge. I was still fairly young, and while I had been in management positions, was not really a, quote, executive in the real sense of the word. I remember one day Ron's executive assistant told me that in no uncertain terms. She said, "You're not an executive." It was a pejorative jab and cut me to the quick. Being young and full of vim and vigor, I was offended, but she was right. Later, when Ron was coaching me to become an executive, he told me something that I've never forgotten. He said, "Do you know what executives get paid for?" After I paused, he asserted, "Paul, executives get paid for their judgment." Wow, that's something I never would have thought of at the time. Perhaps I would have thought, you know, executives get paid for their wisdom, their ability to forge new paths, and to get their employees to follow them, et cetera. But no, he stated it was their judgment. Ron had been an executive for many years in major organizations and knew his stuff. As I've pondered that guidance over the years, I believe he was right. Real executives who lead large and small organizations are charged with making tough decisions. The easier ones get made before they come to you. Mid-level managers can handle the day-to-day tug and pull of an organization. There are work rules and administrative regulations that guide routine decisions and then appeal processes that often repair mistakes from those. But the major gut-wrenching, hair-pulling, and potentially organizationally fatal decisions that everyone is afraid to touch, these end up at the executive's desk. So what does that executive need in order to make reasoned, wise decisions? good judgment. Better yet, excellent judgment. Judgment that has been forged in the fires of 100 smaller decisions with the outcomes weighed afterward to determine which ones worked and which ones did not. Judgment that comes from further analyzing those smaller decisions to determine why they did or did not produce the desired outcomes. Mental integration of the reasons why, and then the application of the lessons learned for new decisions. That is what makes you an executive. That is what's required to learn, and judgment that only comes from error and learning from it. When I served as MTA executive in Baltimore many years later, I'd spent most of my time making decisions. I remember thinking that time of Ron's admonition that it rang truer now than ever. With over 3,000 employees and $1 billion operating and capital budget, I was being asked to make decisions from week one on tens of millions of dollars worth of projects, the direction of a state agency that affected hundreds of thousands of lives on a daily basis, and personnel choices that impacted employee careers. My children asked me shortly after I took that job, "Dad, how do you know what to do?" And while some of my employees at the time might have argued that I didn't, I felt better prepared than at any other time in my life for this job because of the thousands of choices I'd made in a then 28-year career spent in transportation and government management. So when the choices of this newer, larger position were presented, I followed the principles I had learned from making many poor choices and some good ones that worked over the previous jobs. One definition of judgment is, quote, the ability to make considered decisions or come to sensible conclusions, unquote. So to be an effective executive, one needs to have learned from previous choices what the options are and then weigh them based on those lessons learned to choose a course of action that will lead to the best or most desired outcome. Listen, executives are called upon to lead. Leadership requires making the tough decisions. The success or failure of an executive is also often determined by the outcome of those decisions. Decisions made most wisely are informed by the decision, by the lessons of previous choices. Executives need not be old, but they must be seasoned in order to truly lead effective and successful organizations because they are paid for their judgment. And that's it. That's my chapter 6 from my book, Full Throttle, on executives get paid for their judgment. Hopefully you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think. Drop me a line at paul.comfort@trapezegroup.com. If you have any ideas or you want to be on a future episode of Transit Unplugged as an executive in a transit agency with something newsworthy happening in your organization. Thanks so much for being with us today and stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Transit Unplugged News and Views. And thanks again to our guest, David Bruffy, for telling us everything that's going on in Mountain Line Transit. Thank you as well to Alea and Mike for their segments. It's always great to hear from them. And coming up next week on Transit Unplugged in Depth, we have Mr. Julian DeHornoy of Yara Trans from Down Under in Melbourne, where he talks to Paul about light rail and the future of light rail in Australia and the world. And if you have feedback for us or would like to be a guest, you can now email us at info@transitunplugged.com. So until next week, hope everyone rides safe and rides happy.